Okay. I gave already a short presentation in the last APNIC meeting in Vietnam, and I promised to give a bit more explanation because we didn't have too much time at that time. Basically, well, the first thing to say is that this project started in 2002. It was designed in 2001. So. Obviously, some of the concepts maybe have changed. For example, one of the RFCs that we based the project on has changed in the last year or year and a half or so. The project finished actually in middle of, I think it was end of June of 2005, but I think the information here is still useful for some of the ISPs and IXs that maybe are considering to start running IPv6. The basic idea of this project, Euro6, was to try to push somehow the deployment of IPv6 in Europe, which at that point, 2001, was still very, very, ancient. So the idea was to try to involve the key players, basically the main ISPs in Europe, in every country, and start getting real experience with IPv6 and bring IPv6 into production services. So the main steps for this project were basically designing and deploying a real IPv6 network. As I just said, it was almost nothing available, I mean real IPv6 services at that time. I am talking about basically 2002. Research on some advanced services in the network, which often are not available in commercial networks, neither for IPv4 sometimes. Also complement all the network experiences with applications that within the project and also involving people outside the project need to be validated in a kind of user groups and also international trials. So we tried to be as much supportive as possible to people that was not really involved in the project that wanted to get some IPv6 connectivity or try some experiences, or ISPs that wanted to give their first steps, and also be active in dissemination, standardization activities, and so on. Well, I think I can skip this one. Basically, it's what I said. The idea was to basically promote the deployment of IPv6 in Europe, but not only in Europe. We have been active in dissemination all around the world. And the members of the project consortium were basically all the European big ISPs. So we had Telecom Italia, Telefonica, Vodafone. Originally was Airtel, but it was acquired by Vodafone, British Telecom, France Telecom, Portugal Telecom, and Dutch Telecom. As you can understand, this was a research project, and basically the entities that participated were the research arms of each of these companies, not necessarily the commercial part of the company, but somehow we managed to involve also the commercial parts of those companies. One interesting point is that the complete idea of the project came out in actually was March 2001 in a European Commission meeting with a very, very small group of people trying to tell to the Commission how we can help to move on towards IPv6 in Europe. And there were a lot of people, mainly from university. I think I was actually the only one not related to university. And all these people were telling the Commission we need to invest more and more in getting more students involved in IPv6. And while my idea was, look, we are totally wrong. The universities are going to do IPv6 and are going to train about IPv6 to people because that's part of the goal. But what we really need to involve is the big ISPs. And while I got the task from the Commission, okay, you have 3 weeks to create a consortium and make a project if you can make it. And well, in 3 weeks, I succeed to convince all these people, which was not really very easy. But I think the result is very interesting because, in addition to getting the European Commission funding, of course, the European Commission only funds 50% of the projects, except for universities that get 100%. We also convinced the commercial parts of most of these operators to actually donate links, and that allowed us to make or to extend the project lifetime, which originally was only 3 years, and then it becomes 3.5 years, because most of the cost of the links, instead of being borne to the project itself, was paid by all these companies. This also proves that they were really, really interested in getting some results and starting doing some IPv6 things. So there was also two industrial partners, SixWin. It was at that time probably one of the first companies making IPv6 products. We had Ericsson Telebit. Telebit was a small Danish company that was just guided by Ericsson because the need for IPv6 in the 3GPP thing and so on. We had also three universities, Technical University of Madrid, University of Southampton, University of Murcia, some small companies like my own company, Telscom from Switzerland, and Novaginet that is taking part more in activities related to portals and a lot of security things related to certificates, for example, and so on. And there was also another interesting thing. It was Eurocontrol, the European agency responsible for somehow the air traffic, which also during the life of the project decided, because at that time they were still using X25, and they decided, okay, let's move instead of just to IPv4, let's move to also IPv6. And, well, there is already some deployment in that network of IPv6, and up to now, the planes don't crash in Europe, so I guess it's working fine. We had also, and this is very strange, I forget in my room one book, but I can show later you the link for this book, and you can get it. We involved a lawyer company because there are always, when getting any new technology in production, some legal things that you need to consider, for example, related to privacy, data protection, and so on. And we actually did a very nice job here and even published this book that when I finish my presentation, I will show you from where you can download this publication. Okay, so this is the network that we built. Basically, we had one internet exchanger at every main city of the countries where this project was being carried out. So we had one in Lisbon, one in Madrid, one in Paris, one in London, Berlin, Zurich, and Torino. We also connected with 34 megabits links, only IPv6 links, these exchangers. And then we have different other sites, which were the partners participating in the project, basically, but also ISPs external to the project or other universities and so on. And of course, this network was connected with the rest of the IPv6 networks, 6BON, other big projects like 6NET, which was doing something similar, not related to IX, but also deployment of IPv6 in larger scales, basically in the research and education networks in Europe, and actually was the one that, let's say, put the knowledge on hands of the GEANT people to activate IPv6 in GEANT. And well, that's it, basically. So what was the main work related to internet exchangers within this project? Well, the idea was having an infrastructure that provides interconnection services for both layer 2 and layer 3 in such a way that several IXs can make a direct offering of peering in one networks. And behave as a kind of transport for service providers, and even getting every IX using their own TLA to assign addressing directly to ISP customers. So instead of being dependent on the ISP for the address delegation, having that from the IX itself. Curtis? Oh, okay. I know you don't like too much this idea, but that was an experiment. Project partners use their own TLA prefix to assign their customers and regional ISPs the connectivity to the IX. So this is a very, very simple picture of this idea. We have what we call the standard Internet Exchanger customers, which get their addressing space from the ISP as usual, and then we have what we call it the next generation Internet Exchangers customers, which get the addressing space from the prefix allocated to the IX directly. So we have a layer two. Well, we started basically four different models for this IX infrastructure, from the traditional one to one which it's the one that we define it as the best one from the project perspective, and it's what we call it the IX Model C. So it has a layer two infrastructure which is fully redundant, where the Internet Exchanger services are placed. The router infrastructure from the long-haul providers and the customers, and what we call it the layer three mediation function router, which is the real new element on this infrastructure. Okay, so the idea from the place where we come out with the idea for this structure basically come from the previous version of the RSC 2374. And here, the IX plays this intermediation function role between the ISPs and the customers. Routing is about the same as you can see in any transit network. So from that sense, it's nothing new. You can have also route servers or whatever you need to run this infrastructure. We built also a lot of tools to do emulation of this before going into the real deployment. So here is how the address assignment it works. Basically, you have, of course, two options. Either the IPv6 address are assigned by the long-haul ISPs. In this case, the network itself of the project, Euro 6, was behaving as one of these long-haul providers. Sixbone was behaving like another one of these providers. And we have, for example, Sixnet, the other project that I mentioned, behaving as a third one of these long-haul providers, or the IPv6 addressing can be assigned by the IX, as I just explained it before. Same for the routing. You have the autonomous system within the network of IXs, and you have IGP, EBGP, and so on. So from that perspective, it's nothing new, just the way that we use it within our network. From the service perspective, what we try to do is also to understand how making services available in the Internet Exchange can be interesting for the ISPs and also for the customers. So making the IX as a kind of place where these services could be concentrated, and some of the services that we had were basic network services like multicast, AAA, quality of service, DNSSEC, mobility services, transition mechanism, route server mechanism, different kind of applications like in any data internet data center, like web servers, FTP, SMTP, video conference, e-learning, point-to-point peer-to-peer applications, and also a lot of monitoring services. The idea somehow is also to see this kind of IX as a possible way for the ISPs to create virtual ISPs. Okay. I know they don't like.
So Jordi, yeah. A layer 3-based infrastructure that provides services and addresses to the customers is traditionally called an ISP. And ISPs and IXPs doing the job of ISPs has traditionally not been very long-lived.
I think this is, Randy Bush, IJ, I think this is wonderful. IPv6 exchange points can do this, whereas IPv4 point exchange points just switch traffic. This is a fantastic advantage of IPv6.
I thought you don't like it. Okay, so one very concrete example of this internet exchange, which is live still, because when the project finished, some of the partners decided to take it down, but some others decided to keep it working. And this is the case for the UK internet exchange, or UK 6X, which in the nomenclature of the project was called Long 6, which is, as I just explained at the Model C, a mix of Layer 2 and Layer 3 IPv6 internet exchange. It was the first one in UK to offer IPv6 services, use commercial IPv6 addresses. At that time, when we started the project, there was a lot of usage of 6BON. Now it's obviously not longer necessary and not recommended. So it's located in Telehouse. It's an open internet exchanger, and it's still following the aims of the project of motivating the deployment of IPv6 and further understanding of IPv6. I guess that's not anymore needed so much, but that was one of the basic goals. So they have an Ethernet switch for the layer 2 peering. They have an ATM switch for additional customer access mechanisms. They have a router for the layer 3 functionality. They use the 2001.618/32 prefix for the user address allocation. And then they have for their own infrastructure the 2001.7FA. They have different tools like Looking Glass, ASPA3, and so on. And they have also different kind of services like mobility services, streaming services, even a Debian mirror, and so on. This is the basic structure. They have also connectivity to GPRS networks, and we did, in fact, a lot of demonstrations and activities with GPRS and mobility with IPv6. They have transition mechanisms, like I just mentioned, 6-to-4, tunnel broker, and so on. I think they also deployed Teredo Relay. I am not sure right now, but I am almost sure. One of the services that we tried also is DNS services in general, and especially DNSSEC services. From the perspective of what you may know about DNSSEC, it's nothing new, just making this service available from the change. So as I just was trying to explain a couple of slides ago, I think I got interrupted and forget about it. Basically, the idea was also, from this perspective, you can create, let's say, white box virtual ISPs. So you have several ISPs sharing some infrastructure. They can probably lower their cost if they can put together data centers and most of the services. And of course, that has good advantages from the perspective of saving costs, but it has disadvantages in the sense of they are competing, or they are, let's say, less competitive from the customer, because the customer is not tied to the address of an ISP, because even if he changed the ISP within the same region where the IX is located, he will still keep the same addresses. So from the customer perspective, it may be very nice, but from the ISPs, that may be a disadvantage, obviously. And I think, well, that's the final general vision of this structure, where you have all the security, quality of service, and services, transition, mobility, that may be somehow some of them collocated in the IX itself. And I was actually quicker than I expected. That's it.
Curious Linguist NetNode. And I'd just like to paraphrase my dear friend Brandy here. And I sincerely encourage all my competing IXPs to do this.
Okay.
the ones of you who want to have remaining cash flows, on the other hand, if there is something useful you'd like to do about IPv6, you would go to your local friendly RAR and ask for your IXP address space, and then you leave this to your customers, the ISPs who traditionally provide services, to exchange traffic over your LAN, and as they've always done, and you would just go on minding your own business. Which is what the rest of us do.
Yeah. I must say that we got of course, negative feedback, but also we got some positive feedback. And actually, I don't remember exactly what city, but somebody in Canada was telling us that they are actually, I'm talking about 2 years ago or 1 year and a half ago, they said they like it a lot, the idea, and actually they deploy it an IX following our model. And at the moment, they didn't complain it, so I don't know. I guess everything has good things, bad things, advantages, disadvantages. That was a research project, an experiment. The IX was a starting point for creating this project, but the important thing for the project was also all the IPv6 movement that we created around the IX and a lot of development activities, porting of applications. And yes, the IX was an important part, but there was a lot of additional things. And I cannot disclose, because that was part of the confidentiality for some parts of the project, but there are some of the European telcos that participated in the project that actually designed business models following this approach. And, well, I don't know what they are going to do, if they are going to deploy it commercially or not, but some of them have very, very interesting ideas out of this model. So, of course, it may happen, it may not. Maybe some people like it, maybe some people dislike, but it's one more possibility.
Jordi, yeah. Bill Woodcock. The fact that someone expressed a preference for this 2 years ago and hasn't complained since does not strike me as strong evidence that they are still
in operation.
It was a kind
of joke.
Today. Okay. All right.
Randy Bush, IIJ. Jordi, the truth is, or at least my perception is, that what we're really looking at here is an IPv6 multi-provider deployment test bed, not an exchange point, at least not with the words we're used to about exchange point. And so we can make a lot of fun, but indeed if we turn this and look at it as a V6 multi-provider deployment test bed, then there are probably some lessons learned. And it would be fun next time, maybe not at an IX SIG, but at a V6 SIG, to know what worked well, what didn't, and why.
Well,
And that would be very helpful, because despite the fact we make all the jokes, many of us are living with V6 to some extent. I mean, you know, I am from IIJ. So what works, what doesn't, et cetera. To many of us, some of this tunneling stuff is horribly scary and bad lessons we've learned, et cetera. But there are other things you're trying that I would like to know, you know, not the marketing side, but why some things didn't work and what we have to do to make them work.
Yeah, you're right on that, and that probably, as you said, belong not to the IX SIG. But there was something that I think I had in one of the slides, but maybe I mistaken the slide set. There was something that was a very evident learned lesson. It's that if you do that, if you do this, obviously you cannot predict the return path for your traffic. But that's something that we know very well also from IPv4. So that's the main learned lesson from this model, and this is a problem that if we go into this model, or if somebody goes into this model, need to understand that very clearly. You cannot predict where you are getting the traffic back. That's a very, very important lesson. So,
do we have any other questions or comments for Jordi?
I really have to say this. We've been telling people that there's nothing like a layer 3 exchange point. I think you need to correct your slides. I mean, that's really bad message to send out to people, still saying that there exists a layer 3 exchange point. Really bad.
You work for PCH. PCH was pushing layer 3 exchange points for years. You want the email right now? From you, Woody.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jordi.